Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the New Zealand King Salmon FY20 H1 results announcement. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Grant Rosewarne, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I've got Andrew Clarke with me here today, our CFO, and as usual, we'll split the presentation between us. Firstly, I'd like to say that we're very pleased with our first half result, and I'd like to set the scene for you. So, as you all know, last summer we had a poor outcome due to the high temperatures, but we still achieved the lower end of the guidance that we gave. So, as a result of that, we've had to slow and ration our product. So, this does two things. It sort of evens out our volume across the years, but more importantly, it creates more biomass. So, when we have less fish because of a summer event, we grow the remaining fish larger, and in that way, we partially compensate for the loss of biomass. And we've certainly done that this year. So, when we slow sales, we do that by rationing, but also by increasing the price. And we try and do that in a coordinated, sensible way. For us, this is a one-way value creation. So, when we take our price up, we don't see that we ever need to bring it down when volume does come back online. And the reason for that is, instead of doing that, we step up our sales, marketing efforts, and we expand our geographic base. And when I say that, that's a city-by-city expansion, not a country-by-country expansion. So that sets the scene for the remainder of the presentation. So, as I said, we're pleased with our result. You see our price up $1.50 per kilo, and that's going to move closer through to $2 by the completion of the full financial year. You see our volume restrained from where it was down to 3,442 metric tons for the reasons that I've outlined. This, of course, affects our revenue. So, our revenue at $84.2 million, down from $87.8 million due to the reduced volume, partially offset by the higher value. Our pro forma operating EBITDA of $16.5 million compares reasonably well with $17.3 million in the prior half, and our pro forma net profit after tax was $8.7 million compared to $9.7 million in the prior half. Our statutory net profit after tax was up $5.7 million at $20.8 million compared to $15.1 million. We have our new aquaculture model in place, and we're pleased with the way that's been implemented and what it's doing for us. We have a fully imputed final dividend of 2 cents per share declared and paid on the 20th of March 2020. Our guidance remains exactly where it was, reaffirmed by our board yesterday, with an operating EBITDA somewhere between $25 and $28.5 million. Then flipping over the page, this shows graphically some of the things I've spoken to. So you see our pro forma operating EBITDA in a half-on-half comparison for the last 3 years. You see that coming down, and that's all volume-related. You see our gap EBITDA going in the opposite direction. That's with us creating more value. Then you see our geographic spread, and that's quite topical at the moment. You see that we have a relatively small commitment to China. Our commitment's the wrong word. We have a small amount of volume in China. China probably has as much potential as the USA, but that's over the long, long term. It takes a long time to develop that market. I'd say Europe has the same potential as the USA and would be available now if we had the volume. We've got Southeast Asia there at about 6%, equal to Australia. Again, probably has about half the potential of the USA. Japan, we used to sell 100% of our product to Japan, down to 4%. And you know, still strong potential there, but not, it will never be what it used to be to us. The other important factor here is not only do we have a geographic spread, we have a channel spread. So we have a mix between retail and food service, and we can flex in and out of those. So if people dine out less, we can ramp up our retail sales. Now I'd like to hand over to Andrew Clark.
Thanks, Grant. So moving now to slide number 5, health, safety and wellness. Health and safety is job number one, and we're not satisfied with our current performance. We continue to focus on critical risks and have seen the long-term injury rate generally being of a more minor nature, so slips and strains and so on. And we're also seeing some pleasing results from early intervention heading off an LTI in the first place. Moving on to number 7, sustainability. We continue to ramp up our efforts to ensure our business operates in a way that's enduring and that we're proud of. Very happy that the Monterey Bay Aquarium's Influential Seafood Watch recently renewed its green best choice rating. That's for the entire New Zealand salmon industry. As the leading seawater producer, we're a key part of that. Very proud to have achieved Aquaculture Stewardship Council certification for our pilot site, which was the Clay Point Farm, and that's part of our commitment to the Global Salmon Initiative. That's a group of about half of the world's salmon production companies by overall volume, and it's all about increasing transparency of operation of salmon industry and sharing learnings to achieve best practice. So that's a key commitment that we've made over the last 6 or 7 years. Slide number 8, we have committed to the United Nations Global Compact, and that's got some key responsibilities that we sign up to around human rights, labour, environment, anti-corruption. So that's a new initiative, and that's about us being a responsible community citizens, so it's part of our ongoing commitment to one of our key stakeholders, which is the community that we operate in. We're doing a lot of work to understand what our current position is, for example, around carbon footprint, and so we've done a life cycle analysis recently and looking at our packaging and supply chain areas as well, just to gauge where we are and what opportunities there are to improve our sustainability situation. Moving on to the financials on slide 10. As Grant mentioned, in the first half we have very solid pricing. We had to restrain our sales somewhat to ensure that we do have supply for the longer term and are able to deliver to our customers and look after them. We've seen margins up and the EBITDA percentage consistent. The overall EBITDA is slightly lower, as Grant mentioned, off a slightly smaller sales volume in the first half. Our statutory net profit after tax improved year on year, and that's driven by stronger fair value gains, which is the future profit that we would expect to make off the fish after deducting the costs to get them through to harvest and to market. On slide 11, just a word around the difference between statutory and pro forma. So as usual, we've incorporated fair value gains into the livestock and finished goods inventory. This slide provides a bit of explanation on the process, and there's a reconciliation, couple of slides at the end of the presentation. There's a new standard, IFRS 16 leases, which does impact these results, and so in essence, what that's led to is a $5 million asset and liability being recognised in our balance sheet relating to leased offices and vehicles. Again, there's a reconciliation slide at the end of the presentation that illustrates the P&L impact. Moving now to the harvest by farm on slide 12. So our new aquaculture production model is now in place. We got the key implementation ready prior to the summer, so that was delivered in full on time by the team. That has changed the timing of our harvest. So for example, Ordinarily, we would have harvested the Otanarau farm on the second vine there during our first half year, whereas this cycle it will actually be early in the new financial year, FY21. We harvested around 3,700 tonnes in the first half, as Grant mentioned, and you can see the breakdown of which farms that came from. We do expect around 7,800 tonnes for the full year, so indicative where that's going to come from in the second half on that table. On the next slide, water temperatures are just one factor in the survival. They've certainly been relatively favourable so far this year. We are, of course, in the middle of the most challenging time, which is February through to about the middle of April. So as usual, we will come back after that period's completed and provide a post-summer update in due course. Fish health on slide 14. So our new aquaculture production model, as I mentioned, it's in place. Got quite a number of initiatives to protect fish health and therefore survival. In place before the summer, it means that we handle the livestock less, so not towing pens with livestock in them. We carry out a full site clean and fallow, which means leaving it empty for a period after we've harvested out the farm. We've got the upwelling in place that's around generating extra oxygen and flow, water flow on the sites and taking advantage of any thermocline difference in temperature between down close to the seafloor and the surface temperature. Some of the farms we've seen a little over a degree difference, so that's been very useful. Other farms is less of a difference, so we're learning that. It's generating some good support there, we think, for the summer performance. Immunisation appears to have helped us manage the impact of one of the bacteria that's present in the environment. The other one, Tenacia baculum, does remain a challenge that we're working on. So in summary, we've put the new aquaculture production model in place. We're continuing to refine that, and we do expect that will be able to further reduce variability and risk over the coming cycles. On our balance sheet, slide 15. So balance sheet in a strong shape. We had net debt of 25 at the end of December. We have a $60 million funding facility in place, so plenty of headroom there. At this December, we do have additional inventory, and that's around stock build with harvest in excess of sales, again, smoothing the supply so that we can deliver to our customers as they're wanting. Major investments in fixed assets during the period, so we completed the feed barge Thomas Song, quite a bit of investment in upwelling and this new aquaculture model. Some additional pen infrastructure and farm infrastructure on Forsyth and Waihinau, and grading panels to maximise the harvest off each farm. As I mentioned, we've also got the IFRS 16, which has a separate line there for right of use assets and the lease liabilities. I'd like to pass back now to Grant on the sales overview.
All right, thank you, Andrew. So we'll just go through market by market. So firstly, North America. Traditionally, this is where our marketing and story has been most understood, appreciated, and embraced. And that still remains the case. So we've seen continued growth in this market, and we expect that to continue to go for some time. As I said earlier, we add more cities if we need to grow volume. The last city that we added with support was New Orleans, for example. And in Asia, it was Shanghai. So we haven't had to add new geographic cities for some time because we haven't had significant additional volume to deal with. But just to make the point about flexing between food service and retail, there's 400 supermarkets in New Zealand. If we wanted to add 2,000 supermarkets carrying our Regal Smoke brand in the US, probably take us about 6 months to do that. Then looking at China, so our sales to China are temporarily suspended due to the coronavirus. We reallocated all that volume seamlessly at equivalent margin, so no issue there at all. We're just about to restart. We're testing whether the border is open. We expect that it will be. And our retail sales will pick up immediately, and two-thirds of our sales were in retail. Then our other export markets. So Australia has been a bit of a problem child over the years, and I would say that problem child is now fixed. That is a true premium market for us. Atlantic salmon prices are higher in Australia than anywhere else, and we weren't achieving the premium there that we would have hoped, but we've now fixed that. So we've got a great team in place. They're in the right customers. You'll see our brand name on more menus, actually, even though the volume is down. I remind you that we had to bring the volume down. We've largely used price to do that, that we've done that in Australia, and we're now really pleased with the base that we have there. The Asia, excluding Japan and China, has always been strong for us, continues to be so. Slight pullback in volume there as a result of some of our initiatives. Japan, as I mentioned, it's the home of sushi. Salmon is more, well, it's more like chicken is in New Zealand, perhaps. So that is an issue that we have to work hard up against. We have to prove ourselves to be, you know, a true super premium up against what is seen as a more commodity offering in Japan. And we've got a great team doing that in both food service and retail in Japan. Europe has incredible potential for us. The tyranny of distance means we've never really been able to engage as we would have liked, and we've never had the volume to do so. So we look forward to developing that market at some future date. Then looking at the domestic situation, this is slide 19. We really addressed our value creation in this market, if I put it that way. We've taken the opportunity to even out the margin across all of our markets. So the US used to be a bit of a standout for us, and now all markets are equal, roughly, including New Zealand. We've launched Regal Epicurean, which is our Atlantic offering, so finally, we are unbounded in volume. We can get as much Atlantic salmon as we need to bring in to support the growth in this market. And importantly, Regal Epicurean Atlantic salmon changes the power balance between us and the retailers and improves our position there, because we can supply, we don't have to turn them away. We're not restrained from developing our brand. And already within Foodstuff, where that product is ranged, is at a 2% market share. And why is this is also important to us from a margin proposition. Let's just say our average margin, let's just use a fictitious number, let's say it's around about $8 a kilo. So, and you've seen we've gone up $1.50. So there's a huge effort to go from, say, $8 to $9.50 in margin. But if we can bring in Atlantic salmon at only a $1.50 margin, it's created the same value, in fact, because, you know, if we take margin, take a product out at $8 margin and put it in somewhere at $9.50, we've only made $1.50, because there's no upside in our volume base. So Atlantic salmon filling the role of supporting our brand, improving our power position, and for the long term, it assists with our margins. Then slide 20, average price. You can see that we've addressed the situation more in the domestic market than the export market. I know some of you are going to ask me questions about where we go from here, so I'll leave that to answer those questions, but I would say there's limited potential now in the New Zealand market, and there's some remaining potential in our export markets. Then slide 21, fish performance. So you can see the harvest decrease that we've talked about there, still looking to achieve around about our guidance level, 7,800 metric tons. A really good feed conversion result there, and that's partly due to the number of small fish that we've got, but we also had a standout performance of our Namaho farm, so fully harvested out large size, achieved an FCR of around about 1.5, around about 1.5, maybe a bit more than that. So that's a great performance. It shows what can be achieved when all the stars align. So that says, right, you know, technically that's possible. So how can we now take that across our other farms? And I don't want to say that's simple, it's not. But it shows if you can do it once, you can do it more than once. Fish survival is in line with last year. We've had very strong winter growth, which is great. Feed costs are up slightly, 2%. Going back to price increases, we can always, under all scenarios, recover at least inflation as a minimum. Then looking to our outlook, so future farming initiatives. I hope you've all heard of Blue Endeavour. That is our 1,800 hectare site, 7 km north of the Marlborough Sounds. That is our strategy to address many things. It addresses our volume situation. It's an opportunity for us to further increase our margin in the long term because it enables us to grow a more differentiated product in the future. It helps address climate change for us. In fact, we see it as the main strategy to address climate change. So the open ocean and all it offers is key to our future, and we're pushing very hard on that. We've got a hearing date for the 22nd of June with the Marlborough District Council, and then there'll be a 3-day hearing approximately, and then we get a result 20 working days after that. The capital cost for Blue Endeavour, it's far less than we first thought. We've got a range there of $25 million to $35 million in CapEx. Phase one of Blue Endeavour will produce 4,000 metric tonnes of additional salmon. That's on an 18-month cycle. So that's great news, I think. It's the RMA process. We don't have control of that process, but we've put our best foot forward with a great application. We've had 39 people in support of it and only 14 opposed on local environmental issues, which we believe we can address. And I note that I think all of those negative submitters have previously proposed that we should go into the open ocean, which is great. The farm relocation is with the Minister. Clearly nothing's going to happen this side of the election. We hope for a result in the following year. Then on to our expectations. We are going to build our frozen inventory in the remainder of our financial year. I want to reassure you though that that's high value for us, so we make the same margin at least on our frozen inventory as we do on our fresh products, which is not the way it used to be. Our pricing remains very strong. In fact, I said, you know, we've done a great job with $1.50. That's going to play out closer to $2 over the full year. We're diversifying our offerings, whether that be, you know, in our existing brands like Ora King, Regal, Atlantic Salmon, pet food, and we're doing that to create resilience for our business. We've not seen an impact from the coronavirus as yet. We recognise this is an extremely fluid and dynamic situation. We're not only looking at, you know, what is the sales impact, which there hasn't been any yet. We're looking at, you know, do we flex out of food service more into retail? And we're also looking at our supply chain of our various inputs, you know, how are they affected by potential disruption, but we do think we've got that all under control. We are able to reallocate product between markets and between channels, which is great. That will help us depending on how the coronavirus unfolds. We're on track to spend our $20 million worth of CapEx. We've got a depreciation of $8.2 million. We're really pleased with the way our new aquaculture model has gone. That was a significant part of our of our CapEx, about $4 million, I believe. There's no reason for us to change our guidance. Our board reaffirmed $25 to $28.5 million pro forma EBITDA yesterday. We're working hard on that water space, and that is absolutely key for the future. So expectations in terms of volume, around about 8,000 metric tons FY21, 9,200 the year after, and as always, summer is really key to our achievement of results and volume. So with that, that's the end of our presentation, and we're turning that over to questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question comes from Guy Hooper with Forsyth Barr. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I suppose first question for me, just focusing on fish health. You mentioned, now forgive me if I mispronounce it, but Tenac herbaculum, concerns around the disease and its impact. Can you just provide a bit more colour on that?
Yeah, so I'll start, maybe Andrew can add some. So Tenacity baculum is a ubiquitous organism that exists around the world. As far as I'm aware, it's in every sea and ocean. It is a known problem for aquaculture, and other jurisdictions have learned how to live with it and control it. We've recently increased our ability to be able to detect the organism and therefore more correlate it with any issues that we've got. I note there are some vaccines that are available to deal with the Tenacity baculum. We've done some trials on that already. We think it is part of the summer equation. So as usual, these things are never simple. They're multifactorial. You know, there's definitely temperature, you know, in the equation. There are definitely microorganisms in the equation. Tenacity baculum is one of them. Other jurisdictions have learned how to deal with it, and we're well on our way to doing that, we believe. It's great that we've got this additional information about what its effects are, and Corthron have been really helpful in determining that. So we think with increased knowledge and learnings from around the world, we will get on top of this situation. We think the open ocean is part of the answer to that. The environment is so good in the open ocean, we don't think Tenacity baculum will be a problem out there. It certainly could be. It could be if conditions weren't as good. But as I say, we've got a depth, a temperature, and a flow out there, which is fantastic. So, Andrew, any comments? No. Okay.
Thanks, Grant. And I suppose just following on from that, in terms of the farms that you have shifted your operating model onto the single year class, can you give us a sense on what the performance difference you're seeing between those, between ones that have shifted and ones that you haven't?
Okay, so Guy, for clarity, we haven't really, you know, there's the relocation process, which is an effective shifting of farms. So what we've done is taken all of our assets and we've reallocated how and when we farm on those sites. And we've created a fallowing period for all of our farms, and that was previously only true of our Pelorus farm. So we haven't actually shifted them. We're just, spread out our production. We've brought some sites that had been fallowed for a long time back into production, for example, Forsyth. We're using new techniques on all of those sites, and we're seeing a result that we're pleased with. But you know, summer's always a difficult time for us. You know, so far it's been a very cool summer, but it's not over yet.
All right, thanks. I suppose one last question from me. I mean, you mentioned, water applications under the RMA process can tend to be dragged out or perhaps isn't I suppose, the best way to go about it. Given the government strategy announcement, do you see changes to how water space gets allocated into the future?
I would say, Guy, yeah, in the long term, yes. But in the short term, it's still the RMA. But when we turn up to a hearing and we say, you know, here's a government-initiated strategy, so this wasn't, you know, born out of industry. Government came up with this strategy themselves. It's an all-of-government strategy. It's to take the industry from 600 million to 3 billion. And, Guy, I think you know my view is that open ocean aquaculture could become New Zealand's most valuable industry and its greenest primary sector. So it's incredibly helpful to us. However, we would like to see the government, you know, come up with more concrete initiatives to enable open ocean aquaculture. So, you know, the RMA is not a great tool for allocating water space. And I think there are initiatives underway to be more rational about that and to get a better allocation process. But for the time being, we're working well with the Marlborough District Council. That's where the decision will be made. We're going to the place that pretty much all of our detractors have said we should go to, the open ocean. I don't think anybody per se opposes it outright. It's more, okay, you know, what does it look like when it goes out there? You know, what's the scale of it? You know, tell us how it operates. It's all those sort of things. So we are hopeful that what we've got, the RMA, will deliver on or about the 22nd of June, but we think we need further central government support with enabling legislation to really maximise aquaculture.
All right. Thanks, Grant. That's all from me.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jack Crowley with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning, Grant, Andrew. First one from me. I'm just trying to kind of reconcile the full year sales volume guidance, which has come down a little bit, with unchanged FY20 and 22, sorry, 21 and 22 guidance, and the improvement in FCR. I guess if we were to assume that you guys discharged the same amount of feed but your FCR had kind of improved, that would imply that you should be able to kind of harvest more, and noting that kind of harvest volumes are down a little bit in 20, or at least sales volumes are down a little bit in 2020, I guess what that's implying is that either the FCR rate isn't sustainable, or you think you can now discharge less feed because of the kind of average sea farm utilisation under the new operating model, and the way that kind of best fallowing that needs to be offset with the use of lower quality farms. Could you just talk us through exactly, I guess, what dynamics are going into supporting the harvest volume expectations despite the FCR that we've just seen?
Yeah. Jack, it's Andrew. So I suspect you might be reading slightly too much into it at the moment, but what's going on here is that we are signalling we had to restrain sales in the first half of this year in order to make sure that we looked after our long-term supply responsibly. And so now we've started to step that up, and that, because of timing, that does mean that this year's sales and harvest will be slightly down on what we've previously guided. And you know, you're talking probably a couple of hundred tonnes thereabouts, so it's low single digit percentages. The next thing that we're saying here is that there is no reason at this point to move away from previous guidance around FY21 being approximately 8,000 tonnes of harvest and FY22 being approximately 9,200 tonnes of harvest, both of those, as always, subject to summer. So, you know, nothing to change that view at this point, and of course we'll continue to give guidance as we get closer to that. Now, you also asked about feed discharge and production volumes. I guess once those fish are already in place on all of the farms, locked and loaded, so we have to plan ahead how many head of fish we are going to transfer onto the farm as smolt every time we stock them, and then So you're always estimating what is the capacity of the farm, what FCR do we expect, and therefore what's the production. And you will get a variability in the ultimate output. So, you know, this is a bit dealing with last summer and moving on so that we look after our customers for the longer term. And then no reason at this point to change future guidance around harvest volumes.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, Jack. I think you are maybe getting a bit ahead of where we are. So we're saying, you know, the FCR that we've just achieved, it really is positive for the longer term. We're not, you know, counting our chickens before they're hatched in the second half. We both had a stunning farm, Namaho, and we had this positive, you know, small fish have a better FCR than large fish, and so that's played into the mix a bit. But I think, you know, you're right in terms of the long term, and by that I mean Blue Endeavour, but I think it's just too optimistic to assume that we're going to have anything significant in the short term. We've had a really good, you know, result that may be somewhat one-off.
Okay, now that makes perfect sense, and I guess we'll kind of stick with the FCR type assumptions that we've had to date, but across our fingers that things come out better. I guess second question would be interested in, there was a few comments about kind of the second half pricing maybe being up $2.50 rather than $1.50 or $2.
Stop you right there. Yeah. What I said is moving through to $2. No one said $2.50, Jack. You really are, you know, Jack.
You're encouraging us.
You are an absolute optimist here.
Oh, okay, sorry, maybe I interpreted that wrong, because I thought $2 across the first year implied $2.50 in the second half after $1.50 first half. But if we say kind of $2 in the second half, $1.75 across the full year, is that kind of the annualisation of gains that you've seen in the first half, or are there other kind of mixed factors that you think provide you further price upside?
Yeah, Jack, you're exactly right. It is the annualisation, and as Grant also said, I guess we've consistently given this message, we'd be confident over time of achieving ongoing price increases in the order of CPI, and wouldn't count on anything more than that. Now, I know that we have been able to deliver more than that, but we certainly wouldn't count on that continuing with, you know, you can see in New Zealand in the first half, a bit of resistance there in terms of a bit of volume impact. So we have probably pushed that relatively hard this time.
Yeah. And, you know, so when we talk about the future, Jack, you know, we think, you know, I think the market acknowledges, you know, things have gone extremely well with our Ora King brand. But as we go forward, we're going to grow a more differentiated product, but that's predicated on the open ocean, and that's where we get the next step up, the next significant step up in our margin is, you know, half of our Ora King volume will be differentiated products that don't exist at this time.
Got it. Okay, thank you. The next one for me, just so that we completely understand this Tinnitus baculum kind of circumstance. Is it the case that obviously that's kind of in all salmon growing locations across New Zealand, but have you seen the effects of that escalate as warmer water temperatures have been observed? And could you maybe just talk through, I guess, in terms of fish performance or kind of fish quality, what the implications of Tinnitus baculum are?
Okay, so I note that the Tinnitus baculum, it's been around a long time. It's in an MPI report, you know, that's 5 years old, and it mentions, and we've known about it. What's changed is we're pinning more of our summer problems on Tinnitus baculum than we did in the past. So we were going, okay, this seems to be definitely temperature, well, it is definitely temperature related, but it's multifactorial. And instead of now, you know, it's multifactorial and we don't know what's causing the other part of the problem, we're saying Tinnitus baculum is a large part of the problem. It's not the complete issue, but it's a large part of it. But as I mentioned, because other parts of the world have had to come to terms with it and have understood the impact perhaps earlier than us, they do have solutions, and that's around both husbandry practices, vaccines, and those sort of things. So the thing that's changed is we're now understanding what the source of some of our summer problems is, over and above the temperature. So in terms of is that escalating or not, so I would say, you know, we're in a bit of a race there. So we improve our practices, we improve our sites, and we try and get ahead of the curve on that. And when we have a good summer, we're definitely ahead. And when we have a bad summer, like last summer, as you know, we didn't get a good outcome in that. So we're not complacent about the situation. We fully understand the importance of addressing that summer mortality. The team are driving really hard to do that, and now they know more about what they need to do. So they have more of an understanding of, okay, if this is a large part of the problem, here are the practices around density, these are the practices around fallowing, and this is how we've got to manage, you know, the summer stress situation, and these are the known types of solutions for Tenacity Baculum, and the team are going to apply that. So I say our ability to control things has improved.
Excellent. That's very helpful. That is all from me. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Rosewarn for closing remarks.
Yep, so as I said, we're really pleased with the way things have come out, given last summer. So in some ways, not too many things could have gone better. So the pricing has turned out to be better than we anticipated. The summer so far has turned out to be better than we anticipated. Our feed conversion ratio has gone better. So, you know, and we understand a little bit more about what the total summer issue is. So that's good. So all those things are moving in the right direction, but we're still affected by what happened last summer. And of course, there's still the possibility that this summer may ramp up from here. It's not looking like that, but you know, we were saying fairly positive things at this time last year, and then we had a very late, long, hot summer. So, and that turned out to be quite disappointing. So we're not counting our chickens before they hatch. We do have the initiatives for the long term to solve these. That's tied up with Blue Endeavour. We have another 12 sites that we're looking at down the coast, all the way down to Stewart Island. We note that Ngāi Tahu have a large application in for a salmon farm on Stewart Island. We think that's brilliant. That shows that here's a very respected iwi that take environmental issues and considerations and guardianship extremely seriously. So if they're prepared to endorse our industry in such a way, we think that's a huge advantage. We'll obviously look to see if there is the opportunity to work together. We have no issues or qualms about our ability to grow our brand and further differentiate our product. So we see all of that as positive and in the mix. And that's why I continue to say that with the right support, open ocean aquaculture could become New Zealand's most valuable industry, bar none, and by far its greenest primary sector. So with that, we'll say goodbye. Thank you.